This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to a new edition of Catfish and Ice with your host, Chad Minton. Welcome in. Sorry, we are not able to get a live episode to you this week. Apologies on that. But we did want to get you an episode in because the Predators are officially in the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs. They got three games remaining, and we really need to cover just what needs to happen in these final three games for the Predators. This is your host, Chad Minton. We are presented by DraftKings and part of the Hockey Podcast Network. We'll tell you about our current offer with DraftKings here in a second. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit subscribe below. Comment on the video. Would really appreciate that. So let's get into it. The Preds take on the Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago on this Friday night. And the Predators, even though they do have that playoff spot locked up, they got the overtime point on Tuesday against the Winnipeg Jets to secure that 16th playoff berth in Preds history. 16 playoff berths is pretty impressive. Of course, we would love to see much more success once they're in the playoffs if you're historically a fan of this franchise. But looking at this current team right now, I do think they have the ingredients to pull off a first-round upset. Not trying to be prisoner of the moment here, but I do feel that. But they need to manage these last three games very effectively, because what we're going to start off with today on episode 228 of Catfish on Ice is really just how important is the wild card one compared to wild card two from the Predators' perspective, because that's essentially what's at stake right now in these last three games. They could lose all three. Yeah, it would not be great mojo to take into the playoffs to lose three straight games. Not saying that, but even if they did and Vegas or LA were to pass them for the top wild card spot, all that really means is you got to figure out who's going to win the two divisions we're talking about here, with the Central Division and the Pacific Division. And I'm about to do a quick update on that, because there is with only four games to go, or three games to go, or in some cases, only two games to go. Dallas only has two games left to play in the regular season. There's still so much uncertainty right now. It's why we love the NHL. It's why we're diehard hockey fans, is because every game really does matter in an 82-game season for the most part. How much do these last three games mean for the Predators, though? You got to balance this stuff out, because I hate to bring this up, but injuries are always possible, especially this late in the season. The Predators have been very, very fortunate on the injury front this year. They did deal with a little rash of injuries, injury plague with their defensemen throughout March, but they were deep enough to weather that storm, being able to call up Mark Delgazzo, but being able to lean on Spencer Stastny. They got Tyson Barrie in there for a few games. But recently, since this team has been back to fully healthy 100% as they were trying to claim that playoff berth, some capable guys have been healthy scratched a lot lately. First of all, Cody Glass, to the chagrin of much of the Predators fan base, has been healthy scratched. Let me start with him. You got to get him in these. Well, you don't have to. No one's forcing you to. But I think Andrew Burnett, who has done a commendable job, a masterclass job, I put it out there, a masterclass job at really managing this lineup that was just all over the place. I mean, there was so much that he had to juggle with this lineup, coming in as a first-year head coach of this franchise, taking over for John Hines, much different philosophy type of head coach than John Hines. And it took some growing pains, as we all expected there would be. But no doubt, they've become kind of the little darlings of the NHL with their 18-game point streak and the way they play and their blend of young talent and veteran talent. All that's great. But where I'm going with this is, in these final three games, I think you got to get Cody Glass back into the lineup and pick and choose who you want to healthy scratch. Maybe there's a guy out there that we don't know about who's been playing banged up, wasn't technically an injury on the injury report, but the guy needs some maintenance. Maybe that's, I mean, who knows who it could be. But I think, first and foremost, you could put Cody Glass in and give our workhorse and our just our guy who battles down there in front of the net every game. And I'm talking about Ryan O'Reilly. And he is the type of seasoned veteran that he's not going to get rusty if you rest him these final three games. He's not. He's going to come in game one of the playoffs ready to play. You don't have to worry about him taking a negative impact from resting the final three games. So he is a player that I, at his elevated and higher age, how much of a beating he takes and the way he plays the game down there in close to the net a lot of times, I think resting him the final three games is a very fair assessment to make right now. Yes, it would be a downgrade in terms of your chances of maybe taking wild card one. That could mean you lose two of these last three games or something like that could happen. And you could, that's why I'm presenting this question. How important really is wild card one compared to wild card two if you're the Predators? That's, I'm about to put on the screen here for our YouTube viewers the question I put out for everybody to discuss on my Twitter. Let me get it shared on the screen here real quick for all of our YouTube viewers to see, because I got a really good response here from a lot of followers on X and formerly known as Twitter. So let's get that on the screen there. There you can see it. Let me get where I'm still in there. Well, went away. All right, let me work on getting that back up there. But until I can, I will still read the responses. So I put out there, what's everyone's thoughts on Preds resting some core players in the last three games? I know the top wildcard spot is still in play, but is it worth risking a catastrophic injury to a core player? Also think Cody Glass should be back in the starting lineup for the last three games. So that's what I put out there. A lot of good responses. Let me read some of them. Clay Brewer, who's been on the podcast a couple times recently, talking trade deadline and other stuff. You can go back and listen to that episode. It's still a really good episode to listen to. But he writes for Nashville Hockey Now. He put, the only position that should rest is goaltending, absent an already existing injury that needs recovery. Keep the blood flowing. Sit out of practice if you need to, but keep the intensity full throttle. Very good point brought up by Clay there that I am torn on. I really don't know how to think about these last three games, because you can make an argument for both sides of it. There is something to be said about keeping the guys motivated, keeping the chemistry up, keeping the momentum up. But you also got to understand, we are going into game 80 of a grueling NHL season. And I'm sure some of these guys have been playing with nicks and bruises for a while, and they could use a game or two off. Now, so, like Philip Forsberg, for instance, he's been getting a ton of rest just through not having to practice, and he's chasing that goal record tied with Matt Duchene right now at 43 for the single season. So you definitely don't want to rest him all three games and keep him from being able to get that record. That would not be fun. But I tend to lean more the other way. It really scares me that a really key core player of this team could get hurt in these last three games with not much really on the line other than the wild card spot. And then everything is derailed for your chances in the first round. And with a fully at strength lineup, I think the Predators could pull off a first round upset. And then who knows what happens after that with a goalie like UC Saros, something similar to 2016-17 when he rode that magic to the Stanley Cup final. Something like that could happen with this team. They're that good of a team and makeup of players, blue-collar players, they could pull off another magical run like that. But you can't take any unnecessary injuries when these guys didn't have to necessarily be playing. That's what you have to be cautious about starting tonight against the Blackhawks. But still, good point by Clay. Philip Forsberg's Scooter on Twitter says, not opposed to it if you want to give someone a break. Glasser is more than capable of slotting in. Would be interesting to see JAD, which is Jared Anderson Dolan, who I'm about to get into, get a look. Don't think he's played a game yet. So Anderson Dolan was claimed, if you remember, by the Predators from the LA Kings on March the 7th, I believe, and has a really good, promising future. It could end up being a really, really wise waiver pickup by the Preds, but he has yet to play a game. He has been a healthy scratch, and I'm thinking he can play center, he can play wing. You would think he would come in as a winger for sure if he does get into one of these last three games. Definitely got to find a way to get him in for sure. You claimed him. Let's see what he's got. Let's see what he can do. Give a guy a rest. You know, give Nyquist a rest. You could give Nyquist a rest for sure. I'm not too crazy about resting like some of the younger players, because they, more so than veterans, the younger players like Luke Evangelista and Tommy Novak, those guys, they don't need rest. They need to be in there. They need to be going full throttle into game one for sure. You do not want to disrupt their playing time. But when it comes to a veteran like Gus Nyquist, who has been around for so long, a guy like that can maybe use some rest, and you can get Anderson Dolan in. Anderson Dolan could come in for Philip Forsberg once he gets some rest after Forsberg goes ahead and handles some unfinished business and gets that goal record tonight. Let's see if Forsberg can do that, can get that goal record against the Blackhawks tonight. That'd be really cool. So, yeah, that's definitely a good point there by that responder on X there from Philip Forsberg's Scooter. So agree with that for sure. Let me roll through some of these other ones. Randall on Twitter says every team has done this over the years, so no issue with it, and it makes sense if they have roster call-ups left, which I don't know if they do. I'd also want to give Tomasino a top six audition to see how much of a difference this Admiral stint has made. Yeah, so that's a good point there brought up by Randall in the question about call-ups. So, yeah, if you're not aware, after the trade deadline, an NHL team can only make four regular call-ups from their minor league rosters. A little bit of a quirk there with the rules there after the trade deadline. So for the Predators, by my calculations, they've only made one call-up, and that was Spencer Stastny back in March. So they've got three left. So that's something to keep an eye on there. Could they bring Philip Tomasino back up to finish out the regular season? Could they bring up Juuso Parsonen back up? Could they give somebody an NHL debut? That could be interesting. Maybe Fedor Svechkov, maybe Joachim Kimmel. What if one of those guys made their NHL debut? Zachary LaRue. I mean, that seems a little bit more far-fetched, but you got to look at it from the perspective of the Admirals as well, which they are leading their division. They have locked up a spot in the Calder Cup playoffs. So you got to be careful how you balance that stuff out too. This is like playing chess. It's definitely not playing checkers here. You got to make sure that you're just really being careful of how you're affecting your AHL squad, who's been playing great hockey as well and is going to look to win a Calder Cup this year in the AHL playoffs. But, yeah, you got three call-ups in your back pocket that you can make in these last three games. So that is something to think about as well, not counting emergency call-ups, which it doesn't look like at the moment. The Predators are going to need to have an emergency call-up from the minor leagues because there are no serious injuries that we know about right now. So Mark Del Geisdo is another one on the defensive side of things that could be called up to give somebody some rest in the defensive corps. So a lot to be focused on there. Thank you for all those responses. Follow me on X at @Chad_Minton to read all those responses and get in on that conversation. Let's go further down here. Looking at the defensive options, you got Dante Fabbro, who's been healthy scratched a lot. Tyson Barrie, of course, we know has been healthy scratched so much this year. And that's where you could maybe call it Mark Del Geisdo or even Jeremy Hansel, who has really been impressing a lot of people in the minor league ranks as a possible prospect that could be called up and maybe play a game or two in the last three games. So looking at tonight against the Blackhawks, one cool thing that's happening is Kevin Lankinen is getting the start. UC Saros is getting maintenance, nothing serious, no kind of injury or anything, just maintenance. You love that you have that ability to do that at this point in the season, since the Predators have locked up that playoff spot. So that's a good position to be in. So you see Kevin Lankinen going up against the Blackhawks tonight on the road. He is the road warrior. How many starts has Kevin Lankinen had to make on the road this year? And he has delivered in a lot of them. But you get the cool, classy call-up for Troy Grosnick, the longtime AHL veteran, originally with the Predators franchise, came back to the Predators franchise this year, and he's having an outstanding year mentoring Yaroslav Askarov down with the Milwaukee Admirals. And Grosnick is going to be Lankinen's backup goalie tonight against the Blackhawks. So that's cool. Love to see that, especially considering he started with the Predators organization. And so it'll be cool to see him wear the sweater, sit on the bench, be a part of that. And then we'll have to wait and see what happens in the last two games. Does Grosnick maybe get a start? I think that'd be cool. You know, I am not opposed to letting guys play, giving guys rest, and giving other guys a chance to play. And if you fall back to wild card two, it's really not the end of the world. So that's what we're looking at right now here on this Friday afternoon, getting ready for the Preds to play game number 80 of 2023-2024 against the Chicago Blackhawks. All right, let's get to the Central Division updated race. Kind of alluded to it earlier. The Stars, all they have to do is win one of their last two games to get the Central Division title. They did take a 3-0 loss on the chin last night against the Winnipeg Jets. So the Jets are really riding hot right now. And nobody's talking about the Jets as being a team that can do damage in the playoffs. And, of course, we just saw them on Tuesday as Predators fans. And one of the most thrilling games of the year. The Jets played like they had a lot to play for. And that big thing they're playing for is to get home ice advantage in the first round against their almost 100% certainty their opponent's going to be the Colorado Avalanche, unless the Dallas Stars just completely lose their last two games and the Jets or the Avalanche win out. But more than likely, it's going to be Jets and Avalanche in the first round as the second and third place teams. It's just a matter of who gets home ice advantage in that series. So that's what the Jets were playing for on Tuesday against the Preds. Of course, the Preds had not officially locked up that playoff spot yet. They needed at least a point. They entered the third period down 3-1. Frustrating performance because they were throwing everything at Connor Hellebuyck, and he was having one of those Vezina trophy-like performances, 40-plus saves on the night. Which in the first period when I was watching Hellebuyck and the way he was seeing the puck, I was already putting it out there in the atmosphere that I feared that that Hellebuyck was in for a 40-plus save performance, and that's exactly what he did. But credit to the Predators, because that new slogan that they've adopted throughout the year is relentless, and that's exactly what you saw as the second period wore on. They never got a goal, but the Predators kept pushing. They kept using that term relentless, and then they get into the third period and Spencer Stastny gets a goal, really good goal, second career goal. And then of course, Ryan O'Reilly gets into the slot and just buries it past Hellebuyck to tie the game at 3. That was, at least I wasn't in person, but that was the loudest I've heard Bridgestone Arena in a very, very long time. Definitely gave me chills because it's so awesome when that building gets that loud like that. I mean, it's like nothing else in the league, and cannot wait to hear that crowd in the first round of the playoffs this year when they host games 3 and 4. We don't know who that first round opponent is. There's no way to know right now. And here's why. Let's look at the division leaders. So it could be Dallas, but we got to look at the Pacific Division for a second here, because suddenly the Edmonton Oilers have a very realistic chance to pass the once unstoppable Vancouver Canucks. You look at the Pacific Division right now, and the Canucks have really, really fallen back to being just an ordinary team. You look at the Canucks, they got a 4-point lead on the Edmonton Oilers, but the Oilers have two games in hand. The Edmonton Oilers still got to play 5 more games. They're at 101 points. The Canucks are at 105. And that's, they've got three games left. So very realistic chance that the Oilers could not only pass the Canucks for the Pacific Division, but be the first round opponent for the Nashville Predators. And I know that scares a lot of fans out there, because just the thought of having to deal with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in the first round, not to mention Zach Hyman and the other guys they got. Yeah, that's scary, especially considering the Preds have not been as consistent as you would like to see on special teams. And the thought of having to go against the Oilers power play with the weakness, the very big weakness being that the Preds have not killed penalties at a consistent pace this year, that is definitely something that's going to give you nightmares. You look at tonight's action, the Oilers take on the Coyotes at home. You would think that's going to be a win for the Oilers, so they're going to keep the pressure on the Canucks more than likely. They take care of business against the Coyotes, who we'll get into this another episode when I'm joined by my co-host Max Greenberg for a future episode, but the recent relocation news is getting very, very serious, as it looks like there's a really good chance that it's now a reality that the Coyotes are going to relocate to Salt Lake City, of all places. Getting a lot of pushback out there from fans that Salt Lake City makes no sense. But then there's fans on the other side of it that say, and analysts who say, look, the NHL gave the Coyotes all this time to square away an arena deal in Arizona, in the Phoenix area, wherever it is out there, and they could not get it done. They passed up on a lease deal for Glenn to stay in Glendale, and now they're probably wishing that they would have followed through with that. But anyway, getting back to this current division alignment here and what's going on. So, yeah, the Oilers take on the Coyotes. You would think that's a win. Looking at the Canucks and what they got up next, they, this weekend, will take on the Oilers. So there you have it right there, folks. Huge game on Saturday between the Oilers and the Canucks. The Oilers will get the Canucks at home. So that's going to be appointment viewing there to see if you can get a little bit more clarity on who's going to take the Pacific Division and who the Predators might play in the first round. So if you're a Predators fan, that's a game you're going to want to watch. You're going to have a lot of reasons to want to watch that. And then, of course, the Jets and the Avalanche are also playing that same day for huge implications for second and third place in the Central Division. The Stars will play the Kraken on Saturday. So the Stars can officially clinch the Central Division on Saturday, since they failed to do that on Thursday against the Jets. So there's what you have there. And then also when it comes to the wild card, looking at third place for the Pacific Division, you still got Vegas and LA battling it out for that. Of course, Mark Stone, his spleen is magically repaired now. He's wearing a non-contact jersey. Being a little sarcastic here, I realize it was legit a lacerated spleen, but the timing just looks so bad. Second year in a row, the Golden Knights have used that LTIR to their advantage, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if the wild card Golden Knights upset a division winner in the first round. So, yes, we are gearing up for what's going to be a crazy first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Cannot wait for this to happen. So, about to get you to my interview with Brian Finlayson, co-host of Level Flight Podcast. You can actually already watch that on our YouTube channel. But if you're listening on our podcast platforms, then that interview is about to come up. We really talked about that game on Tuesday, how he sees the Predators' playoff chances as a host covering the Winnipeg Jets, so an outsider perspective. Also, we talked about weaknesses for the Jets. Are they being overlooked? The overall landscape of the Western Conference playoff picture. Looked at some Jets-Preds history, including 2018. That second round, 7-game series that knocked the Predators out. That was the last time the Predators made it to the second round of the playoffs. So that was a fun conversation with fellow co-host on Hockey Podcast Network covering the Jets, Brian Finlayson. Really fun to do that collaboration. So before we get you to that, and before we close out this segment of Catfish and Ice episode 228 with Chad Minton, we are presented by DraftKings. We know hockey games. Move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook. With code THPN, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. And before we get you to that interview with Brian Finlayson, host of the Level Flight podcast, let's look at the DraftKings Sportsbook betting odds for these upcoming games this weekend in the NHL. And let's go to the Friday night action right now. Preds at Blackhawks. You got the Preds as heavy minus 250 favorites at Chicago tonight. You got Edmonton at home against Arizona as minus 258 home favorites. Going down the list here, we've got a lot of teams that are already, their playoff chances are long, long gone. But the Flames are at the Ducks in a pretty close matchup, according to DraftKings. The Minnesota Wild are at the Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights are minus 175 home favorites against the Wild. And going further down the list to Saturday, you got the Dallas Stars heavy, minus 238 favorites at home against the Kraken as they look to take the Central Division. And how about the game of the weekend, if you ask me? Winnipeg at Colorado on Saturday. And it is a very, very close matchup, according to DraftKings, but they do slightly lean towards the Avalanche at home as a minus 148 favorite over the Jets. Plenty other games to bet on. It's going to be a loaded slate on Saturday, so take advantage with our DraftKings promo code THPN for those bonus bets. Thank you for listening and watching on our YouTube channel. Stay tuned for that interview with the Level Flight podcast to get more into the playoffs, to talk Winnipeg Jets and Nashville Predators. Till then, it's been Chad Minton. I appreciate you watching and listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 228 of Catfish on Ice. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, thank you so much. Please hit subscribe below. This is your host, Chad Minton. We're gearing up for the playoffs. The Predators have officially clinched their 16th playoff berth in their franchise's history. They had to do it in losing fashion by taking the dreaded loser point, overtime point to the Winnipeg Jets, but it sets us up perfectly because we got an awesome guest joining us, Brian Finlayson, co-host of Level Flight podcast. We're doing a collaboration here to get ready for the playoffs. It's a fellow podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. First of all, Brian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. It is a beautiful day outside and I'm gearing up to watch another, should be a fantastic matchup between Central Division opponents tonight as the Jets take on the Stars.
Oh, the schedule makers did it beautifully for you guys to have to, you got to play Preds, Stars and Avs. Luckily, you're kind of locked into your spot. We're about to really talk about it. First thing we're going to do with Brian joining us today is we are going to look back at Tuesday, that epic meeting between the Preds and the Jets. It was the two teams end up splitting the season series 2-2, separated by only one goal over those four games. So that is pretty incredible stuff there. Very unlikely. I think it's almost impossible that the Preds and the Jets will meet in the first round, but I would love to at least talk about that game with Brian from his perspective, and a tremendous performance from Connor Hellebuck, of course. So we're going to break down that game, really what it meant for both teams. Also, we're going to look ahead to each of our teams' playoff hopes and chances, where we see each of our teams going, both the teams we cover and the outsider perspective. Want to get into that. Going to talk about some other X factors for both teams. Want to look back at the 2018 series between the Jets and the Predators in the second round, because that was the last time the Predators made it past the first round. We're talking about two franchises that have not had a ton of playoff success in their history. Of course, the Jets were formerly the Atlanta Thrashers, so we're going to get into that. That'll be a lot of fun. But first, we're going to give the floor to Brian. What did that game mean to you? How much different was that game maybe from the perspective of the Jets and the perspective of the Predators? Of course, the Predators were still trying to get a playoff spot locked up. The Jets are pretty much locked in that third place position. What did you get out of that game from the Jets' perspective?
From the Jets' perspective, we didn't need the reinforcement of the idea, but it was the fact that regardless of how you play, you have a chance when Connor Hellebuck's in the crease. I mentioned this on the last episode of our show where, I think at one point the shots, I think were 44-18. That was just after, things got knotted up at three, but no, it was a very interesting one because the Jets were incredibly opportunistic in the first period. You see what makes them successful when things are really clicking where, that first goal with Gabe Vilardi between the legs, roofed it over Saros. But then you have things like, Tyler Toffoli being an impact guy, which they acquired him to do so. Dylan DeMello, who has scored probably, I think, 5 goals in his last 3 seasons. He was given the ability to walk right into the slot and rip it. So using your chances to convert is terrific, but that only matters if you can continue to sort of press. And a lot of what happened after that was them getting caved at 5-on-5. A lot of shots against, a lot of chances against. Obviously, it was 3-1 Jets at one point, ended up going overtime 4-3. A lot of frustration I know from Jets fans because there's been a lot of deployment questions. Top line has changed. And I mean, I say changed, but it's essentially just flip-flopping one or two guys. But it matters a lot to the success of this team. And then obviously they come out with the win, which is huge for that battle for the second spot in the division, because you get that, you get home ice and you get the line matching and that sort of thing. So the win is huge, but with how things shook out, it was hard to be happy about it from a Jets perspective.
Gotcha. Brian Finlayson, co-host of Level Flight Podcast, covering the Winnipeg Jets, little collaboration we got going on here to get ready for both of our teams' playoff runs to see what happens here. So yeah, I agree with a lot of that stuff. So the Preds came out definitely very too lackadaisical with puck possession. I mean, you cannot do that against a team like the Jets. And or any team for that matter, but definitely playoff caliber teams like the Jets. And it came back and bit them. A lot of Preds fans were dogging on Saros, pull Saros, get him out of there. And it's like, come on, guys, he's getting no help from his line mates who are supposed to be protecting the crease and protect him. But as the game settled down, I definitely saw a little bit more desperation out of the Predators, because even though their playoff chances were like 99.9% chance, even if they lost that game, I saw desperation, and it was definitely refreshing to see them storm back in that third period. But let me just say this. I don't think the Jets are getting nearly enough love for their playoff chances. They're definitely getting overshadowed by our two other Central Division counterparts that are in the playoffs, the Stars and the Avs. But just Exhibit A, as you just mentioned, Brian, Connor Hellebuck was just so frustrating from a Predators perspective. But, I mean, it's nothing new to me. The guy has just been doing this for a while now. He's the workhorse, just like Saros has been. Two very different style goalies, but equally workhorses for their teams. So I got to ask you, what, realistically speaking, do you feel like this Jets team has the full ingredients to make a run at the Stanley Cup final?
I feel like I have to preface it where they have the ingredients 100%. But I think it's how you use them. That's going to be the, defining factor as to whether or not this team is a Stanley Cup contender, or if they're a team that has the potential of being, bounced out in the first two rounds. For example, late last game, coincidentally, right when the goals actually started coming for the Preds, Rick Bowness, the head coach, he went back to his quote unquote old faithful because he saw that the other top line was struggling. And that is the top line of Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele, and Gabriel Vilardi. They've played almost 160 minutes together this year, and they have very rarely won their minutes. They have been outchanced. They have been outshot. They have been outscored. And we're seeing that despite all that, the coaching staff trusts them to be the top line. I don't trust that line being able to make as big of a difference in a playoff environment. At this point, it seems almost like confirmed that they're playing the Avalanche in the first round. I can only assume you're putting your top line up against their top line. And I worry, because of the defensive struggles they've had, what Nathan MacKinnon's going to do that line. Like, it feels like a field day for him. But I feel like if they're deployed properly, like at their best, the Jets had a top line of Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, and Gabe Vilardi. And then they recently were running a great second line that had Kyle Connor down there with Sean Monahan, their other deadline acquisition. And then Cole Perfetti, who is the Jets' first-round pick from a few years back, 22-year-old. He's very skilled offensively, but he has drawn the ire of the coaching staff. He's been in and out of the lineup, but they finally gave him a shot to show up in the top six. That line was playing great. They had one. I mean, everyone struggled, especially like in terms of what they were giving up against the Preds on Tuesday there. But for some reason, some guys dealt more with that. They swapped the lines. Perfetti actually is not in the lineup tonight against Dallas. And I think that being too reactionary and taking that top line and, putting it back to what wasn't working compared to what, I mean, they've won four straight games with the lineup they started. And they had lost six straight prior to that with the lineup that they're going back to. So I'm not quite sure I trust the lineup to pull it off in the playoffs, but then you got Connor Hellebuck, who could steal you a game or two, which keeps you in it. So I think they've got the ingredients. They just have to put them together properly.
Now me and my co-host Max Greenberg, we have debated this exact topic in previous episodes. I want to get your thoughts from the Jets perspective. Who would you rather face in the first round, the Avalanche or the Stars? Who do you think you match up better against?
I definitely think the Avalanche, and I know it's weird saying that against a guy like Nate MacKinnon, who is my Hart Trophy pick. Seeing what he did against the Wild the other night, it was like watching, someone going up against, Pee Wee hockey players, just how fast he was going around guys. But I think I don't trust them as much against Dallas's style and just overall makeup of their team. Dallas has the chance to sweep the Jets in the season series tonight if they manage to pull that off. But Colorado, if you look at their depth chart, they are not nearly as deep a team. They rely a lot on their top line for their offense and their top defensive pairing, obviously, with Cale McCarr and Devon Taves. But you look at the rest of their lineup, where obviously they did acquire Casey Mittelstadt to play that second line role, but you've got, Zach Parise playing on your third line after not even starting the year on a team. You've got, Andrew Cogliano still down there. So you've got a lot of older, a little bit slower guys. They're not going to score as much as, another third line would. Let's be honest, Alexander Georgiev and Nett hasn't been exactly the most steady for them either. So I do think that the top lines, Colorado wins that battle, but the rest of the team, if they're deployed properly, I like the Jets' chances to outscore their other lines, and they can make up for anything that possibly goes wrong against the top line with MacKinnon. And then obviously I love the goaltending. That's the matchup there is clearly in the Jets' favor, because I don't know how Colorado can go into a series and totally definitively say, oh yes, Georgiev's gonna lock it down.
And that's the same argument I made with my co-host as well. He said he would much rather face Dallas. I said I didn't say I'd much rather face, I mean, you're picking your poison either way, but I sided with you as well, Brian. Same reasons. I don't trust Alexander Georgiev to not just possibly lose a game or two for the Avs, where the Avs would come out and, you know, have a good game. And then, as you just alluded to, I do think Colorado is much more top heavy than Dallas. Dallas's depth scares me, and it really leads me to believe that they can definitely win a Stanley Cup this year with that kind of depth. I think they're extremely well coached. They're really good on special teams. They're a very disciplined team. You're going to have to go out and take it from a team like Dallas. They're not going to give it to you. They're not going to make very many mistakes. Whereas Colorado, you know, they're going to pretty much have to lean on their top two lines and Cal Makar to just go out there and just have a playoff run for the ages. I don't think they're as good as they were the year they won the Stanley Cup. I just don't think they're quite that good. But either way, you're picking your poison. It's going to be tough. But let's look at the overall Western Conference landscape. And first, Brian, host of Level Flight Podcast covering the Winnipeg Jets, give me your outsider perspective. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Trust me. Give me your outsider perspective on the season the Predators have had, because the overall, you know, they're kind of like the flavor of the month right now around the NHL. When you have an 18-game point streak, that'll happen. They're getting a lot of love. There's even some people out there saying, oh, watch out for this Preds team. They're going to be a force in the first round to deal with. They're going to be a headache, all this stuff. So are you buying the Kool-Aid, or do you think the Predators maybe peaked too soon? They're a fun story, but they're probably just a little ahead of schedule, and they're going to get exposed in the playoffs. What do you think, man?
I feel like it's a bit of both, because when there's a level of extremes like that, it's hard to sort of pull any sort of negatives out of an 18-game, you know, point streak. But it's also, you know, hard to judge them right after that and say this is a completely different team that you've just seen for the last 18 games. And so I feel like, I mean, the Stanley Cup playoffs are to an effect kind of random at times, because a couple weird goals, you know, some bad, you know, suspect penalty calls leading to some, you know, timely power plays, something like that can happen that can change a whole series. And I think that the Preds are well equipped to be opportunistic. I don't think necessarily that they're going to be viewed as you know, a favorite by any means, and whether they play, it looks like it's probably going to be Vancouver, I would think. But I don't mind the Preds' chances against the Canucks. I feel like the Canucks have some holes. There's still some questions about Thatcher Demko, because he has been out for Vancouver for the last while. He will probably be back for the first round, but otherwise your two goalies in Vancouver are a little bit of a question mark. But I feel like the Preds have the tools to be a team that could, say, upset a Vancouver, because regardless of, you know, what happens in terms of the actual amount of goals he gives up, Juuse Saros is going to give you a chance to win most nights. And unless you turn it into a firing range against him, he's usually sound enough that you're going to get that chance. And I think that with Saros in net, and we've seen what happens when things click up front for, you know, offensively for the Preds, it has the makings of a team that could make a surprise run, at least through the first round. Mm-hmm. I think it does have to be how much can go right for them to unseat it versus how much can go wrong to make it go a very quick exit.
Yes, I agree with all of that. I really do. So here's why I am very cautiously optimistic about the Predators being able to do something similar to what they did in 2016-17 when they made that magical run to the Cup final. They do have lines 1-4 that are pretty set. There's not a lot of fluidity going on right now. I mean, Andrew Brunette's pretty much kept his lines consistent. And the team has also been very fortunate on the injury front. For the most part, they did go through a rash of injuries with their defensemen there for a little bit. But overall, this team has been gelling for a while. The chemistry is there. Lines 1-4, there's not a huge drop-off. Their top line with Ryan O'Reilly and Philip Forsberg and Gus Nyquist, I'll put them up against almost any top line in the playoffs. I'm not saying they're the most elite, but productivity wise and how much they've played together is, I think, second most ice time in the league among top lines, only behind the New York Rangers' top line. So they've played all this time together. That's going to do wonders for a playoff series. Ryan, you've got the playoff pedigree with Ryan O'Reilly, Luke Shen, Gus Nyquist. You got a lot of guys who've got playoff battle-tested experience. My biggest thing that I am really, really worried about with this Preds team is, are they going to be able to live up to that elite level of special teams play? Their power play has been very streaky, very much of a roller coaster, and their penalty kill is among some of the worst in the league. They're going to take penalties with how physical they play, and I'm really, really nervous about the Preds having to defend any of these teams' power play in a seven-game series. That's what worries me about the Predators being able to win at least one playoff series, is are they going to be able to live up to the special teams challenge? How are the Jets looking in terms of special teams? Do you think they've got a pretty good setup right now, or similar concerns?
I mean, the streakiness is of similar concern for me. I mean, their penalty kill has been awful for a while. They had that stretch in like November, December, where they went 30 some odd games allowing three goals or less. And that definitely, they weren't taking many penalties during that time. So the penalty kill wasn't really viewed as an issue then. They're sitting bottom half of the league right now in their penalty kill. Their power play, when it doesn't have Gabe Vilardi, is effectively, it feels like a penalty kill. Like there's points where I was joking where I'm like, can we institute a rule where the Jets can decline a penalty? Because it felt like
like football.
It just felt like a waste of time. My issue with their power play is if they're not running it through Gabriel Vilardi down near the net, so it forces teams to kind of move up and down. Their other default system is running it around the sort of umbrella system around the two guys on the half wall and then up through the defenseman at the point, which makes it very easy to defend. If they do the latter there with the umbrella format, they will get shut down very quickly against almost anyone. But if they do actually keep up what they're successful at, which is working down low and then opening guys up by creating that north-south movement, I think that at the very least they'll be like average, which I think for the team, based on how they can play at 5-on-5, is enough for them. But it's just, do they do it?
All right. So yeah, we're kind of breaking down strengths and weaknesses of both the Preds and the Jets. Let me just give you my thoughts from an outsider perspective on the Jets. They've been impressive to me. I thought they might have a drop off this year a little bit, but the fact that they have just remained a very consistent and steady team, and they just keep proving a lot of people wrong when it comes to just staying very relevant to at the top of that of a very, very difficult and tough division. I've never been a big Rick Bonus guy, I got to be honest, but the guy is been around for a long time, and he is he's a guy who knows how to get teams at least playoff ready. And once you get in, anything can happen. I got to say, I don't have nearly any type of high level of disdain for the Jets as I do other franchises that are in the playoffs this year. So you're not going to see any vitriol from me towards the Jets, unless it's obviously Jets Preds, which would be really cool, which kind of brings me to my final question here with Brian Finlayson, co-host of the Level Flight Podcast. It's been a lot of fun doing this, and get ready for the playoffs here in, let's see, 9 days. April 20th is when the Stanley Cup playoffs start, so we're getting ready for it. So last time, the Preds and the Jets have only played each other once in the playoffs, and it was that epic seven-game series in 2018. I still remember it like it was yesterday, because that was kind of the beginning of the downward spiral for this Predators franchise when it comes to that Stanley Cup window being open. It was not open for very long, let's put it that way. But that one hurt because it went seven games. It was Pecorine's kind of farewell series for the franchise. The Jets were just really, really good that year, obviously. And I want to ask you, Brian, what are some of your biggest memories from that seven game series?
I mean, one that sticks out to me is that game 3 in Winnipeg, where Jets go down 3-0 and then storm back on the back of, I mean, largely that storming back was thanks to Dustin Byfuglien, who I know Jets fans miss dearly, and his impact that he had on the ice was almost immeasurable. But yeah, they stormed back, tied it up at 3, went ahead late in the second, and then ended up getting tied. And then they went ahead, I think, with 4 minutes left in the third there, but on a Blake Wheeler goal. That's the thing. You look back, and obviously now it looks like it's so far away, but you think about some of the Jets' key guys at that point and who is still here. But the biggest role player in that game was Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler, two guys who are no longer with the organization, but will forever sort of live in infamy here. I remember that clearly. And I remember I was watching that game 7 and having not ever experienced a game 7 as a Jets fan yet, because they'd only made the playoffs like once before that, mm-hmm. in 2015, when they got swept out by the Ducks. So it was a whole other form of intensity that I hadn't experienced as, you know, a fan in the city. But seeing the early goal from, you know, Paul Stastny to put them up, the deadline acquisition that year, but also having the ability to sort of, you know, the timely goals and shutting things down, and Connor Hellebuck being Connor Hellebuck, like that series, to me, it sticks out very. You know, there's very good thoughts about that, because the next series was so frustrating against Vegas, where they ended up losing, because it felt like they got goalied and they could have won the cup that year, but because of Marc-Andre Fleury, they didn't.
They were definitely good enough to win the cup that year.
100%. Like it was so nice to see that level of play. And I think the peak of that was that Preds series, because there was no stopping. Like it felt like they were bound and determined to win that series no matter what it took.
That was definitely the Jets' launching point for them as a franchise, coming from being the Atlanta Thrashers to the Winnipeg Jets. And you know, looking at your playoff history, you've only missed the playoffs once since then. So that's a pretty impressive stretch run there. Whereas for the Predators, they've made the playoffs a few times, but been first round exits. But both franchises are, if you count all the way back to the Thrashers, both franchises are still relatively young in their NHL history, and they're just hungry to give their fan bases their first Stanley Cup. You know, I mean, I know this is kind of something I would want to ask you about. So a lot of Winnipeg Jets fans, they were fans of the original Winnipeg Jets. Did they come over and adopt the new Winnipeg Jets when they became the Thrashers to the Jets? Or are there a lot of old school Jets fans who didn't adopt the new Winnipeg Jets? What would you say? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like there's a large segment of the fan base that was sort of bored and raised after the initial, reiteration of the Jets left in 96. So obviously they had to kind of pick their own team growing up before they came back. Personally, I was born in 97. So I missed it by 1 year. And then I actually grew up an Ottawa Senators fan. So I had to choose a team because I didn't have anyone else. A lot of Jets fans who were, fans of the initial Jets 1.0, a lot of them held a lot of sort of frustration for a while. They still have their old rivalries that, even if it's not really that big of a rivalry now, like, I know, like, my parents absolutely hate the Oilers and the Flames because of all those years where, you know, Gretzky and all them were ravaging the Jets in the playoffs, or they would come up against Mike Vernon and the Flames and never be able to make it that far. But I know a lot of them adopted different teams for a while. So I think that's why when other teams, especially original six teams, I know a lot of fans that grew up Leaf fans when the Jets left. But I do feel like unless those teams are playing those respective teams, anyone who was the 1.0 fan has hopped on board. So it's not something where it's like they left and then came back and they lost that group. Everyone was waiting for it. They really wanted that team to come back. And I don't think there was any, you know, doubt that they were going to be the Jets. And I know that there's also a large portion of the fan base who refuses to acknowledge the Thrashers records because it doesn't feel right to them. Mm-hmm. Because I know there's a lot of times where you'll see like Ilya Kovalchuk's name pop up mm-hmm. in the record books, and then people will get angry about that, and they'll you know, point to the Solani days, Dale Hawerchuk, the legend of him in this city. It matters a lot to people, and I feel like people have hung on to that a lot. And the more successful this team is over a long period of time, it feels like a bit of a melding of those fan bases. But there's definitely still, you can tell, the people who were massive fans before and those who never had that opportunity.
Yeah, very interesting. And it's something you don't see in sports very often, but we could have a similar situation unfolding here with this latest breaking news of the Coyotes relocating to Salt Lake City, which is just so weird. We'll see how that works out, but there's always that potential that the NHL expands to 34 teams, and they stick another team in Arizona because the NHL says they're committed to keeping a team in Arizona. So just that could happen down the road, where a new Coyotes 2.0 is created, kind of like the Jets 2.0. But yep. Brian, this has been really fun, man. Best of luck to your Winnipeg Jets. This has been awesome. Really breaking down all of your knowledge about the Jets and the playoffs coming up. Really appreciate it, man.
Yo, thank you for having me. And as you said to me, best of luck for you and the Preds. It's set up to be a really good first round. So I'm just looking forward to a lot of great hockey.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being prisoner of the moment here, but because every year I feel like the playoffs are kind of up for grabs, and it's kind of who knows, hard to predict, but it really feels like this year's first round, both conferences are going to be it's going to be really hard to predict, and it's going to be really fun. So it's been Brian Finlayson, co-host of the Level Flight Podcast. Let me tell you how to follow the Level Flight Podcast on Twitter, X at Level Flight WPG. Also, you can follow Brian at YWG Brian. Go give them all a follow, and his co-host, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. This collaboration has been awesome. Thank you for listening to episode 228 of Catfish on Ice with Chad Minton. We're looking to do more collaborations with some of our other Central Division podcasts in the future, so stay tuned for that. Until then, everyone have a great rest of your day.